con Japón una reunión de emergencia del Consejo de Seguridad de las Naciones Unidas en Nueva York, que prometió tomar medidas adicionales contra Corea. Antes de que comenzara esa reunión, que fue sobre las 11 de la mañana, hora del este de los Estados Unidos, el secretario general de la ONU, Ban Ki-moon, dio una muy breve conferencia de prensa también condenando precisamente estas pruebas. Dijo textualmente: este acto desestabiliza seriamente la seguridad regional y mina profundamente los esfuerzos encaminados a lograr la no proliferación. Respecto a la Casa Blanca, se muestra escéptica. Dice que todavía no hay pruebas absolutamente contundentes de que realmente lo que hubo fue una prueba de una bomba con hidrógeno. Es decir, todavía están en el proceso de confirmar, de evaluar, algo que podría tomar algunos días. Por su parte, John Kerry, el secretario de Estado, dijo textualmente que ha sido un acto muy provocativo, y luego en una conferencia de prensa, la conferencia de prensa diaria del Departamento de Estado, el vocero John Kerry puso énfasis en que Estados Unidos sigue asegurando la seguridad y su compromiso con sus aliados y sus amigos de la región, es decir, de la península, y también Japón, fundamentalmente un vecino. China también se comprometió en ese tema. Decía John Kerry que Estados Unidos no va a aceptar la existencia de Corea como una potencia nuclear. Aunque sepa que eventualmente tiene armas nucleares, definitivamente la versión oficial es que no va a aceptar que Corea representa una amenaza para la seguridad nacional de los Estados Unidos y también del mundo, decía Kirby. Y un tema también interesante es que desde el Pentágono, el secretario Ashton Carty, hablando justamente con su contraparte de Corea del Sur, Han, dijo: los actos provocativos de Corea del Norte tendrán consecuencias.
Mientras que la península coreana sigue acumulando armamentos y la angustia crece en la población por el temor a la violencia, los cubanos en Radio Rebelde reportan que su isla caribeña es el país más seguro del mundo. Juan Carlos Costello nos explica.
Sí, gracias. Muy buenos días. Como cada mañana, Yanexi se despereza. Y mientras sintoniza la radio, mira para sus hijos y siente tranquilidad.
Yo tengo la plena certeza de que van a ir a la escuela y van a ser custodiados y protegidos, no solo desde el punto de vista físico, sino también desde el punto de vista cultural.
Aquí los niños son libres, sin el peligro de que nadie los robe para sacarle los órganos, para llevárselos, para comercializarlos como si fueran una mercancía.
El miedo que tengo es del tránsito y eso, nada más, ¿no? No otras cosas. Ya te digo, en Cuba el único problema que hay es la economía. Eso, solamente. Si se mejora la economía, vivimos felices.
A pesar de los rigores de la cotidianidad, en Cuba se respira un clima de seguridad ciudadana. Un conjunto de leyes y organismos se encargan de la protección de los derechos, lo que, según la jurista Mayelín Ascanio, garantiza la existencia de bajos índices de violencia y criminalidad.
Sí, estadísticamente los hechos violentos y relacionados con hechos criminales realmente no son significativos en la sociedad cubana. Sí existen otro tipo de hechos que realmente se reflejan en el estado de la población o reflejan estados de opinión en la población, pero realmente estos hechos no son los que estadísticamente reflejan violencia en Cuba.
Yo saco por acá por la noche y veo la cantidad de jóvenes en la calle. O sea que no hay miedo.
¿Qué edad tú tienes?
16.
¿Para dónde te fuiste anoche?
Para la parranda de Valle.
¿Y la pasaste bien?
Sí, de lo más bien.
¿Sin problema ninguno?
Sin ningún problema.
Cada año crece la cifra de turistas que visitan la isla, a donde llegan atraídos por la realidad cubana.
Vienen y se pasean libremente, y entonces eso demuestra que es el país más seguro del mundo.
Sí, me llamo Silvia y vengo desde Suiza.
¿Y por qué escogió Cuba? ¿Qué le gusta de Cuba?
Bueno, es un país que hasta ahora no conocía, entonces es por eso que vengo.
¿Te sientes seguro en Cuba?
Sí, muy seguro. No hay problema.
Muchas gracias.
De nada.
Cada mañana Yanexi se despereza, mira a sus hijos y se siente segura.
Yo no vivo con la inseguridad de que mis hijos los pueda estar esperando un vendedor de droga en la puerta de la escuela, de que pueda haber una persona que abuse sexualmente de ellos o que los incite a la pornografía a través de internet, porque las políticas de Estado de mi país los protegen y eso para mí es indispensable para vivir.
Ella sabe que no vive en el paraíso terrenal, pero tiene la certeza de que, aunque algunos por ahí solo quieran ver las manchas, Cuba se erige como una luz que destella al mundo. Desde la tierra de Yayabo, Luis Enrique Salavarrí, Juan Carlos Castellón, por Rebelde Haciendo Radio.
En Venezuela, el diputado Elías Jagua acusa a la Asamblea Nacional de promover un golpe de Estado institucional. Jagua declaró el miércoles el desacato de la Asamblea Nacional a la sentencia del Tribunal Supremo de Justicia tras juramentar a 3 diputados opositores impugnados por el órgano judicial. Madeleine García reporta desde Caracas.
Ahora vamos a conversar con el diputado del Partido Socialista Unido de Venezuela, de la Bancada de la Patria, Elías Jagua. El diputado Diosdado Cabello acaba de denunciar y calificó esta situación como un conflicto de poder y una situación que es muy lamentable y grave, de toda gravedad.
Sí, mira, lamentablemente, otra vez, apenas la contrarrevolución adquiere un pequeño espacio de poder, tal como lo hizo el 13 de abril con el golpe de FARC. Ahora lo han logrado mediante una elección democrática reconocida por el gobierno bolivariano y por los partidos del Gran Pueblo Patriótico. No pasaron 24 horas cuando nuevamente se han colocado al margen de la institucionalidad y de la Constitución. La juramentación e incorporación de diputados cuya elección ha sido impugnada y el Tribunal Supremo, a través de la Sala Electoral, ha suspendido temporalmente sus efectos hasta tanto se aclare la manera como fueron electos estos diputados frente a las denuncias de compra de votos, de manipulación que se han sustentado, supone ya un golpe institucional por parte del presidente de la Asamblea, el diputado Ramos Alú, y la directiva, ¿no? ¿Qué consecuencias trae eso? En primer lugar, el desacato y la ruptura del principio de corresponsabilidad que establece la Constitución como garantía de la institucionalidad democrática en Venezuela. La directiva de la Asamblea Nacional ha roto el principio de corresponsabilidad constitucional que se deben guardar los poderes públicos, lo cual hace que el resto de los poderes legítimamente pueda desconocer a esta Asamblea y sus actos. Por eso, todo lo que comience a aprobarse en este momento con diputados que no están acreditados porque fueron suspendidos temporalmente con una medida cautelar, son actos nulos. Entonces, estamos ante una crisis institucional en menos de 24 horas. Por un lado, el desacato a un poder público de la Nación, al Tribunal Supremo, y por otro, la aprobación de actos legislativos o de control político que van a ser nulos de toda nulidad.
En sus intervenciones el día de ayer acentuaron que iban a recuperar la autonomía del poder legislativo. Ellos también dijeron, no vamos a arrodillarnos ante cualquier poder. ¿De qué se trata eso?
Mira, la corresponsabilidad de la autonomía no puede ser la confrontación entre los poderes. Como yo decía, la Constitución habla de autonomía y corresponsabilidad entre los poderes. En el año 2003, si mal no recuerdo, el Tribunal Supremo de Justicia dijo que el golpe de Estado del año 2011 había sido un acto de buena fe de militares preñados de buena voluntad que habían protegido al presidente Chávez, ¿no? Y el presidente Chávez acató esa sentencia. Y el resto de los órganos del Poder Público Nacional la acataron. En ese momento nosotros teníamos mayoría en la Asamblea Nacional porque fue una decisión totalmente injusta, totalmente fuera de la verdad, pero era fundamental preservar la corresponsabilidad entre los poderes. Por eso lo que ha hecho hoy la directiva de la Asamblea Nacional supone una ruptura de un principio básico para la estabilidad democrática, que es la corresponsabilidad y el respeto que se deben los poderes públicos.
¿Y a partir de ese momento? ¿Participando en la Asamblea Nacional a pesar que había perdido legitimidad? Hasta ahora ustedes no han intervenido, lo van a hacer, van a seguir participando. ¿No es un poco esto contradictorio? Participar, tomando como previa las declaraciones del diputado Diosdado Cabello, que se perdió legitimidad el Parlamento hasta el momento.
Nosotros no vamos a abandonar ningún espacio de lucha, de debate y de idea, y los parlamentarios bolivarianos han estado interviniendo con argumentos muy sólidos acerca de los temas, pero dejando claro en cada una de nuestras intervenciones que lo que se apruebe con la presencia de los diputados que han sido juramentados de manera ilegal el día de hoy será nulo de toda nulidad.
Pueblos de la zona costera del sur de México atesoran las chilenas, un género musical que recrea sus costumbres y que a través de festivales son admiradas por la población en general. Fernando Camacho amplía la información.
Para volver a la tierra natal, solo basta escuchar de nuevo su música. Y es de esta forma como en plena capital mexicana, los habitantes del sureño estado de Guerrero regresan a su origen, de la mano del estruendo vivo de la trompeta y el tambor.
Generar un espacio donde migrantes que radican en el Distrito Federal tengamos un espacio para conocernos, para encontrarnos, para refortalecer lo que en nuestros pueblos llamamos identidad.
Una identidad que también vive en el paladar. De eso sabe mucho Elizabeth Mayoral, una cocinera que hace delicias como carne de puerco en salsa verde y tamales. Para lograrlo, dice, tiene que guisar con cariño.
Primero, imaginarme que lo hago para mis hijos, para mi familia. O sea, ofrezco un plato como si fuera para alguien a quien yo quiero, para que lo disfruten y se lo saboren.
El alma de estos encuentros son las llamadas chilenas, un género musical típico de la costa del estado de Guerrero. Pero no se trata solo de canciones, son una forma de transmitir el orgullo y la historia de generación en generación.
Si yo le digo a mi hijo que no toque esa música, me estoy escondiendo de mis raíces. ¿Por qué? Porque me da pena. No debería darme esas penas, ¿por qué? Ahí nací, ahí donde estoy. Es el árbol de mi crecimiento.
Y ese árbol se alimenta con tradiciones como el manejo del telar de cintura. Así lo afirma una mujer que aprendió de su abuela y su madre y sabe de la importancia de defender este conocimiento.
Hacia afuera pueden decirnos que lo que hacemos no sirve, pero creemos que eso es lo contrario, ¿no? Esto es una forma de resistir y es una forma de buscar una forma de vida más digna, más libre.
Y es así, con la reivindicación de su cultura, como los costeños de Guerrero vuelven a casa. Lo hacen con música, con baile y con un color que transforma cualquier sitio en donde estén. Fernando Camacho, Telesur, Ciudad de México.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de Denise Martínez y todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toistli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Escuche Nuestra Voz, programa de información, análisis y cultura, donde su voz es la que cuenta. Todos los jueves a las 9:30 a 11 p.m. aquí, en KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles. Nuestra Voz es parte de APE, Asociación de Programadores y Programadoras en Español de KPFK. Y recuerde, les esperamos todos los jueves a las 9:30 de la noche.
Encuentros con Gregorio Luque, todos los miércoles, 10:30 de la noche. Amor, pasión, arte, poesía, en esta nueva propuesta radiofónica. Recuerde, a las 10:30 de la noche.
Estás escuchando Radio Pacífica. KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Ángeles, 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara, mundialmente por kpfk.org. Quédate con nosotros.
This is Diane Patterson, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101freakradio.org.
January 2003. Stay with us. A complete analysis of the death and perhaps resurrection of the Citizens Police Review Board.
Big old campfire and sing the whole night.
And welcome to Free Radio 96.3 FM and Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. 2 hours of interviews, analysis, and call-in, your opportunity to comment on local politics, particularly as they relate to poor and homeless people, and all of us left out in the cold by yet another city council coup undertaken this last Tuesday on the 27th, when the weak, ineffectual, but not without hope, Citizens Police Review, or rah-rah board, as I used to call it, was summarily executed and buried without much dignity and without much discussion. Actually, that's not entirely accurate. The council did a lot of discussion. They just didn't talk about anything of substance. They didn't talk with the board or with the community. They, as usual, chatted at great length with each other and made numerous bows and different kinds of gestures to the television cameras as they eliminated the board. Looks like we have a call early on. Let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, did you...
Go ahead.
Did you catch last Saturday's morning special on KSCO about the medical marijuana thing?
No, what was that about?
I don't know, but I hope someone taped it.
Oh, I don't know, but often these KSCO specials on that 1080 AM station happen, and they put them on the website. KSCO has a website. You can also call Rosemary there at KSCO at 475-1080.
I've done that. I haven't done it yet, but I probably will because, I'd have to say they're... For a right-wing radio station, they're rather supportive of it.
Supportive of medical marijuana?
Yeah.
Well, it's really kind of hard to find anybody who isn't supportive of medical marijuana except, Republicans who are in Regenerate and district attorneys who have an interest in prosecuting and possibly, some born-again fundamentalists. I don't know. I mean, medical marijuana is really kind of pretty widely accepted, at least in California, and I think elsewhere, too.
I think so, too. Well, I heard a thing yesterday, Molly Ivan, did you hear that, it was on the computer yesterday, but it was on free radio, and I heard her.
I don't know who it is. I'm not sure who she is.
She's a political writer. And she wrote a book called You Got to Dance with Them That Brung You. And it's a book about the politics down in the South and all the weird shit that happens and how corrupt it is and how perhaps you can change the system. And she put on a talk that I thought was it was serious, but it also was funny.
Good.
I mean, she made me laugh, and I needed to laugh.
Right. Well, I don't know. Neither I nor others listening probably know what that's about, but maybe if it appears on this station, it'll appear again. That can happen. This is Molly Ivins.
Yes, it probably will. It's on one of the alternative radio things.
Yeah, I mean, regarding medical marijuana, as I've always said, I'm concerned, and you can get a lot of information on the website, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, where we learn that, the monopoly group, which isn't really a monopoly group because it doesn't really provide for anywhere near the majority of medical marijuana providers, WAM.
But no one can.
They could if Valerie and the city council actually designed the laws locally so that they wouldn't be zoned out of existence to start with. See, that's been the concern of people like Andrea Tischler and Theodora Carey and Anita Henry and Kate Wells, who had alternative medical marijuana services.
We also need the state to get involved, and I don't think the state one way or the other.
No, I mean, the state isn't involved with Valerie, and Valerie continues her operation as she wants, but in fact, because of her collusion with the individuals downtown at City Council and their refusal to allow other groups to operate in a meaningful way, we have only one group that has any legal existence in Santa Cruz, and a group that can only serve 250 people. I mean, to me, it's outrageous. And also, by the way, Valerie declines to even discuss this, so we can't get her response. But I know you've been a member of that group for some time. Maybe you can explain it to us.
Explain what?
how one group can go in and make rules that essentially criminalize other groups and exclude them, and then claim to be some sort of forerunner in dealing with medical marijuana, concerned about the rights of all the medical marijuana patients when only a small handful, a relative handful, are taken care of. I mean, I shouldn't really expect you to do that because you're not responsible for that stuff. But, you know, I continue every time. I don't know. It's like finding people who are privileged, you know, and then other people who are excluded. It kind of pisses me off. That's all.
But not everybody can be served by one, two, or even. If we had 20 marijuana medical cannabis dispensaries in the town, I don't think everybody.
Hey, I think it would be a hell of a lot better to have 2, 3, 4, and 5 than to have one that sits at the center and cuts out the other groups. I mean, that really, to me, is bad news. And I would like to see. I think eventually we are going to see some response. I know Andrea Tischler is interested in a public forum, and maybe this program you mentioned, the KSCO program, which neither of us apparently heard, was the beginning of this. Let's say it again.
They said maybe someone's recorded it out there. I'm looking for either.
Yeah, I am too. I'd be curious to hear it.
Well, I suppose I could get one from the radio station. They know me. They know I'm a radio pirate. Personally, they don't give a damn. In fact, Rosemary Chalmers herself said, "Stay where you're at."
Right, well, that's good. Just don't try to use the words Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 on KSCO because they will bar you from the station. Keep that in mind.
Well, they don't necessarily like any other call letters mentioned on KSCO.
Right. Free speech is fine, except not on our radio station. That's what they say. I know.
It's not only Free Radio Santa Cruz. Any other radio station. They don't want their call. That isn't
interesting. Yeah, I know. But the idea of censoring information for commercial purposes, I find very repugnant, particularly when that information doesn't involve any commerce. Our station is not selling anything. So all we're doing is getting out information, getting out kind of alternative points of view. And we even, as you can hear, speak in favor of some of the programming that KSCO gives. So it seems to me kind of counterproductive that Michael Zwirling engages in this kind of censorship. And
but he does that with other licensed stations.
So what? I mean, I don't care if the FBI does it with lots of different people. The fact that they do it with anybody, to me, is abusive, but particularly when they do it with non-commercial radio stations.
I don't think he's really liked us from the beginning. But
you don't think what?
I said, I don't think he's liked us much from the beginning.
No, I think you're right. It's true. Well, let me know if you're able to get any access to that tape, and let me know if you can get Valerie Correll to come and talk about when she's going to work with other marijuana clubs to actually serve the population and not just simply have the laws tailored to her one group. I mean, I would love to see a change in that so that medical marijuana becomes something that numerous groups can try to address, as was the case before the laws in 2000 were changed. So that's something I'd like to see. I appreciate your calling in. Talk to you later. And, don't get me on my soapbox. Get me on my soapbox. Maybe it's a good idea. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Oh.
Hey, you're really loud, and I couldn't hear the caller at all.
Yeah, we have equipment problems here because the phone can only be turned up to a certain point before it starts to distort. Kind of peculiar, and I don't know what to do about it, but I appreciate your letting
okay.
me.
Okay.
You just kind of got to fiddle with your dial, but thank you for letting me know.
You bet.
Thank you. And, yeah, that's a real, that's a problem. Sometimes it has to do with the telephone of the person calling in, and sometimes it has to do with, I guess, just the equipment we have, and who knows, maybe I don't see it, but it's too loud on my end. Okay, let's get another call. Let's see how we sound. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I heard him just fine.
One.
And I heard myself just fine.
Oh, interesting. Well, obviously, we have different ears out there. That maybe that's a different ears and different radios.
Five. You hear that?
I could hear some of it.
Five. One.
Yeah, 5-1. Heard that. Thanks.
Nine.
Sounds good. All right, well, thank you for calling in.
Yep, that's my phone, so...
All righty.
Y'all ought to be able to hear me, and I don't think the Gentner thing is...
we'll keep listening. Thanks, caller. So, yeah, phone lines are really an important part of this show. If you want to call in and see if you can actually be heard on the air, we can hear you. And moreover, if you got something you want to say, 427-3772 is the number to call, 427-FRSC. I'm going to be with you until 8 o'clock tonight. My name is Robert Norris, and I'm interested in numerous issues ranging from decriminalizing marijuana, including medical marijuana, and particularly at the local level. Some would say, well, you can't do anything unless you get the feds and the state involved. And that's just not true. As we've shown here, we actually began the decriminalization of medical marijuana probably here in Santa Cruz, is one of the prime places here in the state. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yo.
Hey, can you explain what county ordinances are pertaining to you can't sleep in your vehicle on county roads? What are county ordinances?
There is no countywide camping ban as there is a citywide camping ban in the county of Santa Cruz.
Right.
But what there is there is, first of all, there are no camping zones. There are four small, very small no camping zones, Pasatiempo, Tanner Heights, a couple of zones essentially that are on the edges of the city. That don't take up much of the room. They were put in place by public hearings in the mid-80s. But there is another law, which you're referring to, which makes it illegal to habitate a vehicle by the side of the road or on any roadway. It's also illegal to sleep in a vehicle in any public park, county park. And on any county on county property, but it mainly has to do with roads and rights of way, and it's kind of been a confusing law. There's also an exception. There's a so-called roadside resting exception, which some judges have held applies to the side of the road, which you would think would make sense. While others say it only applies to the tiny no camping zones, which is preposterous because you wouldn't make a law just to deal with 1% of the county in that respect. So, and what that roadside resting law says that motorists, essentially, who are driving through, it uses the words, there's an emergency exception for motorists roadside resting, but there's also, again, a bar against habitating a vehicle. And what you got is essentially a vague law that allows the deputies in the county to harass you if you are on any county road or by the side of any county road. Now, if you're on private property, you're okay. If you're on county property that is like unincorporated, not a part of a park, you're okay. I'm not quite sure where such property would be. I believe it's illegal to be like at Emmeline Street at night. Although it shouldn't be, because those lots are quite usable, and there have been proposals over the years to open them up to vehicular camping. I'm sorry, something you wanted to say, caller?
No, I wanted to ask you too. Well, what is the fine for that third county ordinance for sleeping in the vehicle?
It's a good question.
Have you heard the panel?
It's interesting. Even the fines for the city ordinance, which we thought we knew very well, we used to be, I thought, $162 and then became $54. It's actually the fine for city camping, or actually the city sleeping, camping as well. It's sleeping. Sleeping in the blanket van are a $54 fine. Camping, if you have camping equipment, I think can be $162. I've got to double check that. Sleeping in your vehicle or being in your vehicle is a $54 fine in the city. But in fact, the code, which gives, for example, bigger fines, customarily you'll get the bail slip gives you the customary fine, meaning if you get a ticket in the mail and you pay the bail slip, you don't even have to go to court, which in essence kind of constitutes the fine. It's been $162 usually, but then you hear of different fines, which aren't really specified clearly in the code that you can see if you look up at the municipal code in the city. You actually have to find a bail schedule, which I haven't found. And in theory, I've heard it said that infractions can actually be fined by up to $1,000. And I've never seen, you know, fines greater than $160 for infractions for things like camping, unless they're additional charges like failure to appear, which is a misdemeanor and which is something that referee Mulligan loves to add additional fines on him and claims he's being so generous by cutting them off while not explaining to people that they have the right to a jury trial, and it's very problematic if there'll be a conviction. Nobody's going to want to convene a jury to deal with a failure to appear. Anyway, so the answer to your question is I don't know for sure. I think the county fine is, I heard something like $80, but I'm also maybe confusing that right now with university, which is a separate legal jurisdiction, although it is also within the city. They don't usually charge you under city law. They charge you under university code. There are two university codes, I think 57 and 52.
Yeah, I heard $100 last night, but I didn't know whether to believe it or not.
Who told you that?
Sure.
I see. So, well, you know, the thing to do is to wander on down to the sheriff's office and ask specifically for a copy of, you know, ask him what the fine is for illegal camping. You have a friend who's gotten into this kind of trouble at different times, and he's kind of wants to know, you know, what the situation is, and also he wants to know what the law is. He doesn't just want to know verbally what the law is. He'd like to.
Sorry. It just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse and worse. These control freaks are just control freaks. Is the best way I can do it. And they come around and they molest you. I don't know. It's kind of.
Tell us what happened to you, caller.
You mentioned too. I'm trying to rehash what I've heard. At the state parks, if you stay there for $12 a night plus shower expenses, if you're homeless, right, that means if you live in your vehicle, you can only stay there 30 days a year.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Huh?
Yeah, you can always, not only can you only stay 30 days a year total in all the state parks, but you can only stay in one state park for 14 days, and after that, if I understand this correctly, that certainly was the case a year and a half ago in the summer of 2001, I believe, and that was around the time when Camp Paradise began.
You do the math on that. If you're homeless, you do the math 30 days, even if you could, you're already paying rent. You know, plus the shower expenses.
Well,
that's
yeah,
expensive.
I mean, you know, I mean, and what I, of course, the problem here is you need to get people together who are there, who are vehicle dwellers, as, for example, they've gotten together in Santa Barbara with the group Homes on Wheels, and, you know, get a fight on the grounds of the necessity defense, start raising public awareness. I mean, this is something I always, of course, I go after the same thing year after year, you know, day after day.
Have you heard anything about, with all these downsizing and people losing their jobs, aren't there a lot more homeless people now?
Well, I hear that, you know, Borland is at least changing its headquarters, and there's you know, definitely the economy is staying worse. And I don't have any clear figures on the homeless, but I'm assuming that numbers are staying as bad or getting worse, although some would tell you that a lot of the so-called homeless population and, well, the migration into Santa Cruz for homeless people depends to some extent on rainbow gatherings as well as harassment of homeless people in San Francisco, and they get driven out and suddenly great numbers come south. But, I would think locally, our own local homeless population long-term is not getting any better than I'm aware of.
I would think so. They're probably, you know, been laid off for months, and they're probably spending any savings, little bit of savings they had on paying rent. Pretty soon, the landlord's going to give them the boot. And hopefully, they have a nice big car where they could lay down and go to sleep in it instead of those cute little shiny cars where you can't even sleep in them.
I think also the by the way, how are my levels? Can you hear me?
Yeah, good.
The one of the people who might be able to give you an answer to your question, though not necessarily the answer, is Paul Brendel, the Community Action Board. That board has a thing called the Shelter Project, which does things like give out vouchers for emergency medical conditions when people come out of the hospital. And Brendel, I've been kind of coming down on him, and I think properly so, for not standing up against the downtown ordinances. I don't think he was in the audience stopping the Citizens Police Review Board dispersal. Or even its defunding. He didn't talk about it. He was there to stop other social service defunding that happened on the 21st of January at City Council. But he has stood up and spoken about, in the media, the need of people, poor people, to do things like panhandle as a way of just simply surviving in this current economic climate. And I think he may have some stats for you. The number for the Community Action Board
is 457-1741 for those who want to try to get in touch for more information on what the current homeless situation is. Brindell has been kind of following this for the last 20 years. He's had a funded position for that long. He's run the River Street Shelter and other such, services. Okay. So I would get in touch with him. You know.
I got the 457. What's the last four digits?
457-1741. 457-1741.
Thank you, Robert.
Sure.
I got to go. The cell phone's going to die.
Go for it. Thanks for calling in, caller.
Thank you, Robert.
And now's your chance. Phone line is open, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Here we are in Santa Cruz. In case you are out of Santa Cruz, you can reach us at 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. And you can also tune us in on the net at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Want to give us some money, want to donate some equipment, got some advice, you're interested in a program yourself. There's a voicemail to call in. It's 427-4523, 427-4523. We need all the help we can get here. We have been holding our own mainly with the help of some really dedicated programmers and supporters and techs here at the station for 8 years who put in all kinds of work keeping the station going. It's a labor of love. Nobody gets paid for it. We all pay into it to try to do it. And, I'd like to see more radio stations blossoming around the area. Transmitters are relatively cheap, $500,000. Come on, all you potential free speech advocates. We can use you. Set up your own transmitters. Do your own stations. And until you do that, help our station, too. You know, we can use the help. As for the issues I'm dealing with here today, I'm going to be talking about the killing of the police review board. That's the kind of fig leaf group set up in 1995 after being delayed for 3 or 4 years by Councilmember Scott Kennedy and weakened from its original conception, which is supposed to oversee the police department in some way to kind of correct individual complaints of ranging from a violence, a violation of civil rights, a violation of policy, all the way up to murder or unlawful or manslaughter, or not, of course, to prosecute those crimes, but to investigate circumstances where some would claim this is what has happened, where there's been a serious action by a police officer that some construe as even as illegal behavior in a maximum sense. And the board recently, for the last year, has been under the chair of Chair Mark Halfmoon. A little bit less than that, but he was appointed by outgoing Mayor Christopher Crone, and he and others on the board began really seriously looking into issues of strengthening the board. City Council, ironically, wanted it weaker. They want to kind of dump the. They'd wanted the, for some time some members to dump the board, and simply set up one person who occasionally looks over the shoulder of the police officers, the internal affairs department of the police, which is the police officers who investigate the police, and then they're all part of the same department. It's kind of like, you know, foxes investigating foxes, or in the case of, in a way, it's foxes investigating chickens, because the people who make the complaints aren't police. They're people who represent themselves as victims of the police department. And they don't get looked at by objective third parties. They get looked at by the police department, the officers in the same department who are friends with and co-workers with the officers who are accused of misconduct in these complaints. Anyway, city council members, various city council members have wanted for years to slash this away because I think primarily the police chief doesn't like it. The police chief has acknowledged apparently that he's never going to like police review. I was talking to Mark Halfmoon, chair of the Citizens Police Review Board today, and he was telling me that his conversations with Steve Belcher, the police chief, Belcher was very candid with him and said, I don't like police review. I'm never going to like police review. And it's interesting, though, if you read the paper today, and there are two stories about the death of the police review board, Belcher is quoted as saying it was a good idea, but it failed, and some this sort of thing. In fact, the budget crisis has been used to kill police review board, even though the savings to the city is very slight. In fact, it's not really a savings if you consider will probably be increased spending in legal claims and lawsuits and other costs that arise from there not being the kinds of corrections on the police department that even with our own very weak board, to some extent, were in process at different times in the last 8 years. I've been accused by council members like Kennedy and Rotkin of being contradictory or disingenuous or hypocritical when I attack the police review board, and they say I'm, that's one of the stories in the Mercury News, and the Sentinel, I think it's the Mercury News primarily, it says I'm, McLaughlin accused me of filing the overwhelming majority of frivolous complaints, according to implications by council member Rotkin. In fact, of course, I filed a total of 13 complaints over 8 years. I picked up copies of them from the police review board a couple days ago. None of them are frivolous. None of them have been even considered frivolous. Frivolous is a designation that is dangerously close to false, which is a crime. It's a crime to make a false complaint. Strange. In every other line of employment, if you make an accusation against a member of the public, a public servant, then the public servant has to answer for it at one level, and you know you may be wrong, but unless you are engaging in some flagrant defamation of that person, maybe they sue you then for libel or slander. They don't have any further recourse, but the police, due to their powerful lobby, have made it a crime to make a false complaint. And that's reached the point where women in Southern California who make complaints of rudeness against the police are now being prosecuted for false complaints. So we're in a really strange situation. We talked about this here on the radio with Attorney Kate Wells on Sunday and an earlier show, and it's really quite... I don't know whether to be disgusted or chilled or made very tired or saddened, but it becomes more and more difficult for people to bring up police misconduct in a way that will actually correct it. It's not like the point is to engage in target practice with police officers. The point is to make sure that these men and women who are paid and given unusual powers and unusual latitude and the right to use lethal force are responsible in what they do, and not just responsible to other police officers, but they're responsible to the community. That's the point of the Police Review Board, and that's the point of a strengthened Police Review Board, which is what Mark Half Moon, Brent Faust, David Rowan, the new UCSC person who came on the board, whose name at the moment I don't remember, and I would even maybe even go so far as to suggest Tony Madrigal at one time or another. Five members of the seven-member board were trying to do. Working the other way were Jim King, to me a discredited attorney who shows up on these boards, I don't know why, and he's got friends in high places, and Arnie Leff, a doctor who is a bogus Green Party candidate in 2000 and has been bogus on the board as well, who have sought to undermine any powerful action by the board to challenge not just individual police misconduct, but also strengthen and use the powers of the board that currently exist. Now, today, I did an interview with Mark Half Moon, who wrote a very powerful and articulate statement for Tuesday night when the city council destroyed the police review board. And I talked a little bit about that coming destruction on Sunday on the show when I come on from 10 to 1:30. I have a regular show here. And the city council proceeded pretty much as expected. They had a four-part resolution which involved killing the board as of January 29th, closing the doors of the board, eliminating the law which authorized the board, inviting members of the board to meet with members of the city council in the days ahead to work on a so-called auditor model, which is, as I said, it's this bogus model which doesn't have any citizen participation. It's just a professional person is called in to look over the police department's complaints, and if he or she sees something wrong with those complaints, then he or she can ask for an independent investigation. And I've always thought that was a way for the police to avoid any meaningful police review. There are some who disagree with me. Teresa Guerrero Daly, is that her name? I probably have some of that wrong. But she's the woman who's the auditor in San Jose. made quite a presentation before the CPRB some months back. She's got a huge office, more than about $1 million or $600,000, some huge amount of money, and a full-time staff. She's a professional, and she claims to have made significant changes in the San Jose department. But there's it's a costly deal. You've got to have a full-time person. The current board in Santa Cruz is volunteers, or was volunteers before it was killed. And the money they saved to eliminate the board, supposedly, was just two part-time staff members. And I guess the attorney that was advising them, because they needed an attorney separate from the hopeless city attorney, who also had a conflict of interest because he was advising the police department. So we had our own attorney, who I also had some problems with, which I will talk about, and you'll actually hear me criticize Robert Aronson, Bob Aronson, who was the CPRB board attorney. But in essence, the funding saved this last year was, you know, very limited. They made about essentially $1 million worth of cuts, but the only commission they cut was the police review board. And this is something that the long knives had always been waiting to do, particularly, I think, from the police department. The police department just doesn't like the idea of even having a potential independent voice, particularly when the independent voice from Mark Halfmoon and Brent Faust and others on that board was to look into selective enforcement, racial discrimination, profiling, use and display of force policies, irregularities in how the police are treating complaints and whether we're getting the full story, and a whole new process where there would actually be use of public hearings and independent investigations. Now, I saw them proceeding at such a kind of a snail-like pace that they lost all significant community support from the people on the left and from the people who were being victimized by the police, from the people who would like to see that sort of thing end, because the board didn't hold any public hearings and the board didn't have any press conferences or make any strong policy statements or follow up on them when they were ignored by the city council. And so when they came to take the board away, there weren't too many people to defend them, although there was an interesting... There was only one person actually who spoke in opposition, in support of destroying the board, and she's quoted in the story. I shall have to pull out those stories. I'll look at that in a moment. What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to play a little bit of the debate, so-called debate. It was bogus. It was a show debate at City Council. They knew what they were going to pass before they walked into the room. They cut everybody's time so short. Usually, if you have an ordinance change, which they were completely eliminating an ordinance, it was a real ordinance change, they're required to give 3 minutes to people, individual people, and 5 minutes to organizations they want to speak against before that. And they did nothing of the kind. Emily Riley said, "Well, raise your hand, see how many people are there. Oh, there are a lot of people. Okay, 2 minutes each period." And this horrible process, where they allow the city council to posture and babble at great length but cut the public off from any kind of meaningful input or discussion. And even so, the input they got was very pro-board. I mean, there was only one critic to the board. They didn't give any special amount of time to the Citizens Police Review Board as a staff report. They ended up giving Mark Halfmoon, the chair, as an individual, a little extra time, and he took more time. And they gave Brent Faust, I think, a couple of extra minutes. He's the vice chair, or was. But in terms of usually in these circumstances, you allow the staff to make a real presentation to answer the arguments. They didn't want their arguments answered. They didn't want the issue brought up of where are the real savings here. The police department's budget is huge. They have $1 million PR budget. And you're trying to eliminate 80, you know, the, eight, well... They had already eliminated $60,000 the week before. There was $20,000 left. What they were trying to do on Tuesday was make sure the board didn't even meet again once more, which they were ready to do, I think, because they wanted to stop the board from forming any kind of voice of protest against what was going on here, this destruction of the board. Whatever you think of police review boards, this whole process is sort of similar to what they did in rushing into play these anti-homeless downtown ordinances. They held 4 council meetings in 15 days this last summer. And then they held 5 downtown commission meetings in the month. And they still couldn't ram it through because while the council was all ready to just roll over and do the wrong thing, their independent board, the Downtown Commission said no, and they were still working on the so-called exemption zones. We'll talk about that a little bit more later, perhaps. Anyway, here's some stuff, some dialogue, some city council debate from the destruction of the CPRB on Tuesday night. It's been queued up. We're going to listen to a bit of it. I'll comment on a bit of it. And then we're going to turn to an interview with Mark Halfman, who I kind of grilled and took over the coals several weeks ago on this show for not holding the public hearings he needs to hold, not holding things accountable the way he does, but at the same time acknowledging, one, he has the courage to come on and talk about it, and two, he was trying in his own way, and hopefully will continue to try now as an outsider, as a former police chief, Citizens Police Review Board member, to get some meaningful review of police in Santa Cruz. So let's see what we got here. And let's stoke this up. And why aren't we getting anything here? What's going on? Let's see. Seems to be a problem with the videotape. I'll have to work on that. Luckily, we also have this interview, which is a very lengthy one. And I'm going to interrupt this interview at different points. It's actually an hour and a half long. We're not going to play it all now. We're going to play part of it now and part of it on Sunday. It's kind of a wide-ranging discussion with former Citizens Police Review Board Chair Mark Halfmoon, which I did earlier today. You can call in during this interview, 427-3772. I'll try to take your calls off air, and who knows if we want to maybe be able to interrupt the interview if you've got commentary, because, as I said, I'm really concerned that the public be allowed to make its perspective known here. That's what Free Radio is about, and that's what this show is about. So let's, without further ado, go into the interview.
January 30th, 2003, on here television in the lair of Mark Halfmoon, who's a regular, I guess, producer, or is it director, or simply interloper here at Community TV.
All of the above.
You actually are producing a show previously under the asinine title Voices from the Village, which has been changed to
Voices.
Simply Voices. That's from 7:30 to 8:30 on Thursdays, rebroadcast on
Saturday. It's a live call-in show
on channel
27,
and actually it's got some interesting programs recently, including Sherry Connival and the Where Is It Gone selective enforcement resolution by the former Citizens Police Review Board, also the downtown ordinances as opposed by I Love the Forbidden Fences' Matisse Salmon of Sushi Now, also on Mark's show.
He's not a sponsor of the show as of yet.
Line up that sushi man?
We are in talks about him underwriting the program.
It's the public that's underwriting your program, since he's sequestered a significant portion of the sidewalk near his business. But we won't get into that at this time.
Hopefully the public doesn't have any problem supporting our program.
Well, if you support privatized sidewalks, then you should support Voices and Matisse Selman's Sushi Now. Why not? But in this case, we're talking about an audio which is being done here, an actual interview with Mark, who was, until Tuesday evening, chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, or the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, as I used to call it, somewhat sarcastically. Mark, what actually is your position now?
My position would be
prone with your legs spread, or are you simply bent over?
No. Right now, I'm the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board in exile.
In exile. So the old board is gone. Long live the new board.
Yeah, the new board won't be a city commission. It'll be a group of volunteers and citizens interested in the concept of police oversight. And also, Looking into cases of police harassment, police abuse, and police policy.
Well, what are you going to do to make sure that those police officers give you access to the IA internal affairs files, the confidential files which the police used to allow you to review so regularly every month?
I believe that there's no way on earth, short of a full-scale revolution, that they're going to turn those files over to me.
Well, you made some commentary about those files, which are, in fact, the police department's own investigation into complaints come in against its officers, that reviewing those files, which really has been the main business of the board for the last 8 years, has not been entirely satisfactory. In fact, that you felt that perhaps the files were, dare we say, one-sided?
Well, it's not the files so much. And what we get are not files, but we get when we were the CPRB, part of the process, and this is one of the problems, was that the police would get the complaint. They would do an investigation, at which point, and usually this was a lengthy process. It took months sometimes to get the results of the investigation.
An average cost of?
I have no idea what the cost is. I mean, I haven't seen it. But what would happen after the Internal Affairs Department, the police department would investigate this and call and do interviews, they would turn over their findings to the chief or deputy chief, who would then make a finding of their own, saying exonerated or sustained.
Sustained, or
various things, yeah.
Or unfounded.
Yeah, and basically there were 6 or 7 different findings you could find, but out of them, all but one, the only exonerated. You either had to find someone to basically say that they did it or they didn't. And you had 5 different ways of saying, well, we can't show that they did, that the officer is guilty. And some of them were unfounded, no finding, things like that. But basically, sustained was the only way we could say, yes, they did it. After the chief or deputy chief would find out, make their findings, they would send it to the CPRB, and we would review it in closed session. We'd look at the report and look at the findings made by the chief or deputy chief. And then we'd read the case and decide whether or not we agreed with those findings.
By the case, of course, you don't mean interview the witnesses, talk to the people who made the complaint, hold a public hearing, which you have the power to do, but never did. But simply read the report written by the police department's own investigators.
That's right. And only in a couple of cases did we actually talk to complainants in these cases. When I first came on the board in closed session, I thought something was improper when I saw that the police liaison, the internal affairs investigator, would be sitting in our meetings in closed session.
Sergeant Colleen McMahon.
Yes. I thought that was unfair, because if we were a body that was deliberating and trying to make a decision on whether or not something had been done wrong, or whether the police were telling the truth, or whether the complainant was telling the truth, I felt it was unfair to have a member of one side present and not a member of the other. I also found that the reports were designed to be one-sided and to lead us into believing that the police were always right. And we found, in looking at some of the cases, we found irregularities. Like we'd see transcripts of an incident. Many incidents we came across were infractions that were escalated to violence and arrest. In one such case, the transcripts indicated that the person who was arrested had made this statement, which was sort of a violent threat. And anybody reading that transcript would say, well, gosh, yeah, the guy started a fight. But it felt a little funny. It wasn't consistent with what the guy was saying, so we requested the audio tape that was recorded. And we heard it, and sure enough, the person had an accent, and this person was not the same person who made the violent threat. As it turned out, the person who made the violent threat was a police officer. Had we not requested the tape, and that was a process, that was a lengthy process in the first place. The first tape we got was a fuzzy tape. We couldn't hear it. So we had to ask for a copy of the videotape and listen to that. And we found differently than we would have found had we not had the additional information. When I first came on the board, most of the board members were just reading the files. And
that was a year ago?
That was a year ago.
You're appointing a former mayor And we'd like to help you, but we don't have the votes. Christopher Crone?
Christopher Crone is the one who appointed me, Mayor, former Mayor Crone.
I know that when I looked over the documentation which was presented at Tuesday's City Council meeting on January 27th, which talked about the number of sustained complaints by, let's say, the police chief compared with the number of sustained complaints by the Citizens Police Review Board, the police chief ended up sustaining less than half. He sustained 19 complaints in the last 8 years out of several hundred, I would estimate. But your board sustained, if you include the previous boards, 41 or 43. So I think it was 41, actually. So that was more than double the chief's rate of sustaining complaints. I know the media kind of slammed the board, and I have slammed the board, too, for different reasons, as saying that, quoting the police chief, as saying that the board, you know, agreed in 90% of the cases, so what was the problem? And, you know, we discipline our own people and that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is there was a double sustaining rate where you have more than twice as many complaints sustained by a board as you do by a police department indicates a significant difference of opinion. I guess the question to ask is what percentage of those complaints were, at least during your tenure, serious complaints? We're talking mainly about serious complaints involving excessive force, violation of civil rights, something like that.
Oh, I consider complaints that involve violence or taking away people's rights, their freedom, by arresting them for no cause, things like that I consider to be serious complaints. And the media has made much about frivolous complaints. In the year that I've been on the board, I have not seen a single complaint that I consider to be frivolous. Some of them we found to be unfounded, or we didn't find enough information to sustain the complaint. But that doesn't mean it was frivolous, and it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And just because our record is that we, more often than not, find the same finding that the chief has, I think that is due to the fact that the reports that we got were slanted. And we've learned that now, that we've been getting slanted reports that are sanitized to make it look like the complainant is mistaken, misguided, lying, or a hothead. And so I...
Who's on the IA investigation team that investigates these? Whose names are most frequently on these reports? Not public record, who the IA?
Well, the Internal Affairs investigator is Sergeant Colleen McMahon.
She does all these reports?
She's the one who, at least since I've been on the board, she is the one who puts together all the reports.
Lisa Sepulveda before that.
Could be.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. And it's a pre-recorded interview with chair of the former Citizens Police Review Board, or as he calls it, the Citizens Police Review Board in Exile, Mark Halfmoon. This interview is going to be going on. But I wanted to make a note here that for those of you who have cable television, you might want to tune to Channel 27, where Club Cruise will be coming on at 7 o'clock. Earlier in the show, a caller raised the issue of medical marijuana, and that's going to be coming up in a, I think it means a repeat show with Andrea Tischler. I believe Becky Johnson and myself are on that show. Andrea runs a bed, board, and bud, or bed, breakfast, and bud, or better get your breakfast bud, or bud out, whatever it is. In any case, it's a medical marijuana, a place where you can spend the evening, spend the morning, and use medical marijuana and not be hopefully busted by at least the local authorities and hopefully not by the feds. And she's been concerned, too, about the fact that the city's 2000 medical marijuana restriction laws have essentially killed all the clubs but Valerie Corral's Wham. And she's concerned about seeing the liberalization of those laws, about seeing the city put some teeth into its determination not to allow the feds to come in and co-opt the police force here, maybe do something like San Francisco is doing in setting up grow areas. That was an advisory initiative, I believe, passed this last fall around that issue up in San Francisco. Yeah, as I said, she comes on at 7 o'clock on Channel 27, I believe. I hope it's not 26 and I'm wrong, but I think it's 27. If you got cable, check it out, Club Cruise. Then at 7:30, Voices is coming on, previously Voices from the Village, in which there's been some very interesting shows recently. I don't know what show that's going to be tonight. My producer may be calling in to give us that information, but you can always, if you have that cable channel, you can tune to it. I believe it's right after Club Cruise, previously Voices from the Village. So let's get back to this tape with Mark Halfmoon, who's had a year of hard-won experience on the former Citizens Police Review Board, which was killed by City Council in pretty much in opposition to the overwhelming majority of at least verbal testimony, without any meaningful discussions with the Citizens Police Review Board members who were there, and in a very rushed process in order to make sure that the board did not get itself together to meet again, which it still may do. I said at the beginning of the show that there may be a resurrection of the board. If so, I think it'll be under sort of a different framework where, of course, they no longer have access to the IA files, and where they are no longer an official city commission, but they are a citizens group that is concerned with looking over complaints, establishing some sort of interim process where people can come with their concerns, and then they will invite police officers to come too for mediation purposes, but at least to document problems when they come up in the community, and to propose for us a more, perhaps as important, a stronger board in the future that really deals with the issue. It has public hearings. It has independence of the city manager. Some would like to see it have prosecutorial powers, but that is established by initiative, not by scratching Scott Kennedy's back and doing deals with the police chief and trading horses with the city manager in the back rooms and that sort of thing, as the current board was. And of course, it's being killed in the same way, without any public process. Really, we see the very tail end of it, where you see the show public process, but no meaningful discussion of whether this is really going to save any money. Since it won't, if they get a real auditor, it's going to cost more than the board. If they don't, which they won't, they're just going to send somebody in to pretend to be doing this kind of a job without any meaningful citizen participation, which means, of course, that relieves the police chief, because he doesn't have to worry about justifying his behavior, or he hasn't done too much justifying even as it is, because he's in such a position of power in the city still. As has been pointed out, he's never liked the Citizens Police Review Board, and he's glad to get rid of it.
I'll ask you for a $64,000 question, or one of the many that you'll be hearing in the moments ahead. Michael Tomasi, the irascible, outspoken, and colorful critic of the City Council, as well as the Police Review Board, who is also demanding everyone salute his flag and so forth, and who has complained recently of his dog being killed by the police, and his vehicle being towed. Have you received any complaints from him?
We received a complaint from him. In fact, we encouraged him to file a complaint. And that was a very disappointing... it was a good illustration of how the board doesn't function properly. And he would come to a lot of our meetings, and he would talk about this all the time, about his dog and how his dog was killed, and how he felt that he was mistreated by the police. And so we encouraged him to file a complaint, which he did. And when we got it, by the time we did get it, it felt like it had been gone through with a fine-tooth comb and sanitized to the point where there was no way that we could find other than, at the very least, that there's not enough information to prove one way or another. Now, I don't know that that was true, what he was alleging. I don't know if it was true or not. But based on some of the other complaints we got that we felt were altered or sanitized, I would say that the board would work better if it had an investigator of its own that could look at all this information itself and do its own investigation. So then when the board gets a report from the internal affairs investigator, the board would also get a report from its own investigator, and then we could deliberate. Look at both sides of it.
Or you could have, as I repeatedly requested in front of the board, hold a public hearing where at least you could ask the police officer to come and speak, and if she or he chose to refuse, that might indicate something to the board, and it might not. And you could also ask individuals who were giving testimony to come and be questioned by the board publicly. You had previously allowed yourself to be hamstrung by your attorney, Bob Aronson, who told you that you couldn't even ask questions of people in the open interval before the closed session who were presenting complaints for fear that the form of your question might reveal an IA report. I don't think, of course, you had to follow Bob Aronson's advice, but you had chosen to do that. And I don't, you know, I was critical of you at the time, but I'm making the criticism publicly now, but I think it shows the problem you have with the kind of deference that you tend to show to attorneys, given the fact, of course, that the city attorney seems to be has often, or at key points in the board's history, moved in to stop the board from proceeding to a more open kind of examination of things like the Kosovo investigation. That's just my little commentary here. But you can, have any comments on any of what I've said?
Well, I haven't had much dealing with the city attorney, but regarding Bob Aronson, he has been the legal counsel for the Citizens Police Review Board. And over the year that I've been on the board, I realized he was there for that purpose. And I pretty much trust, when I was on the board, I trusted what he had to say. I had to, he was the counsel, he was our legal counsel, he was paying us. I mean, we were paying him, the city was paying him. And I had to presume that he was giving us correct information.
In fact,
I'm not an attorney, so
there's a higher authority than both you and Bob Aronson, and that's simply the law on which the Citizens Police Review Board is founded, the plain wording of the law. So, for instance, at this meeting, and again at the next meeting, we're talking about the meetings of November, and again, I guess it was that January, the meeting after, the question of whether people have direct input into a process where they're making complaints, and they're normally, as you review complaints behind closed doors, and you review the final investigation and the findings of the IA. The key question here is, can members of the community get to you their story, other than what they're able to sort of scribble out in, you know, an initial complaint? And this, of course, has been one of the problems with the process. And I suppose what comes filtered through the internal affairs interviews, which are police officers, often uniformed police officers, interviewing people, those who choose or allow themselves or are available for interview. So the question has always been to me with the Police Review Board, what kind of direct information can we get to you? And I've noticed, the several times recently this fall, you and the rest of the board allowed Bob Aronson to, in essence, kind of rewrite the CPRB law, which does not state that you are exclusively bound is consider only IA information, or even that you are bound to turn over everything to the IA that you hear, everything that you say, because, you know, I mean, it certainly might be a matter of courtesy, but what you're doing is you're reviewing the case and the information you get. And obviously, you'll probably give more weight to the IA because they do a more thorough, more professional investigation, they frame it properly. But the fact of the matter is, you're the citizens' advocates. Now, I think the problem I have is that I, perhaps like others, are stuck in the past, because aren't we talking about a board that is gone?
Yes, we are. We have to talk about it in the past tense. The Citizens Police Review Board is gone. And I don't think that there's, you know, I'm not really certain that there should be any movement to reinstate it, because I don't believe that the city should have a review board. That's one of the conclusions that myself and Vice Chair Faust came up with after studying this issue for the last 6 months. Is the police liaison who would come to the board meetings. She's also the internal affairs investigator, but she's also the recruiting officer, which sort of makes her sort of a public relations person for the police department. And actually, I believe she is the only one who I believe that she was, at least if she wasn't the only one to do interviews, and she's in plain clothes, she's the one who did it most of the time. I don't know that uniformed officers conducted interviews. But I have been told by some people who were interviewed during their complaints that they felt that, and this is hearsay, they felt that they were being led in their questioning. That they felt like I heard words like they felt like they were being tripped up, and someone was trying to trip them up by asking conflicting questions. And I don't know, I've never been interviewed by her myself. But the question you're asking about our review and about Bob Aronson and his advice, I'm not a lawyer, and he is. And at a certain point, I decided to trust him because after having many conversations with him and learning also that he was on the board of directors of the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, I felt that he was dedicated to the cause of civilian oversight of law enforcement. And so, not being an attorney myself, and I could read the documents and see one thing, he looks at them from a legal point of view, and I trusted his interpretation of how they were...
The danger of relying on, let's say, doctors or lawyers as though they had some special expertise above and beyond the ken of normal men and women, I think, is really... Well, it's well known in our society and something that, you know, we have to get past. I like Bob in many ways. I mean, he's on some occasions he's supported me in terms of my attempt to open up meetings under Brown Act requirements, such as when the Police Review Board had its joint meeting or its joint committee meeting with the City Council under Mayor Sugar, and Sugar tried to shut it down, exclude everybody, and close it up so that I specifically wouldn't be allowed to be in the room. And Bob Aronson said, not only can't you do that, but since you failed to give a 72-hour notice for this hearing as required by the Brown Act, this entire meeting is illegal. Of course, it didn't stop Mayor Sugar from going into a private room with other board members and continuing essentially to discuss matters, although the agenda was somewhat different. But Bob Aronson is not the ultimate source of information, nor is Barisoni, nor is the Supreme Court. The ultimate source of information is the law, the enabling law, of the Citizens Police Review Board. And that's no longer the source of information. What's really the source of information, seems to me, is your body and knowledge of experience that you've come up with over the last year, the experience of other individuals in this community who have struggled with this issue for a decade, and the needs of the community around the issue of citizen police oversight.
That's true. You know, one of the things I wanted to point out while I have the opportunity is... some of the things that have been said about the board by the City Council and by the media who are quoting the City Council, whether they, if they misquoted them, then the council hopefully will sue them for libel. But one thing that they say is that we were told a long time ago to find an alternative. We were told back in May of 2001 to find an alternative method of police oversight. And that's true. And then we're accused of not actually doing that. In reality, from the minutes of the Joint City Council Citizens Police Review Board meeting on May 14, 2001, Councilmember Kennedy moved, and it was seconded by Councilmember Porter, to direct the city manager to work with various department heads and the CPRB to achieve the following. Note that I said they directed the city manager to work with department heads and the CPRB. They didn't direct us to do anything. And what he was supposed to do was develop mechanisms to expedite review and reduce the time and resources invested in what appear to be insubstantial complaints.
Let's cut it right here. Just a moment. This sounds like an Arnie Leff special. Arnie Leff was the chair of this board for several years. One of his big cause célèbre is what's called triage. He wanted to cut back on complaints. He was unwilling to look for greater powers for the board. He was unwilling to advocate even for a mandatory process for looking at serious complaints.
Okay.
The reason I mention that is that he was, I believe, chair when this report came out.
Okay.
So,
I'd like to talk about that, but the point I want to address is for the City Council to accuse the CPRB of dragging its feet when back from May 2001, they didn't instruct us to do anything at that time.
Well,
they instructed the city manager to do something.
I don't recall the City Council actually making a lot of criticism of you for that, though I heard, you know, I suppose that came up peripherally, that you were spending too much time not looking at this wonderful auditor's model from San Jose, when in fact you had a full-blown hearing, and the auditor came in and gave a presentation. My concern was he didn't look at enough other models in an open public framework. I understand you investigated those by going to different cities and going to different conferences. The point, however, I think we've got to skip past the bullshit, frankly. We're not talking about you didn't look at the there were so many frivolous complaints, because I'd like to, I mean, people who claim that there were frivolous complaints on the board, you just told us you didn't see one frivolous complaint. Now maybe you're just a man with a big heart who doesn't mind Michael Tomasi talking for 10 minutes in front of the mic.
Not a complaint. Him speaking in front of the mic, it's an open public meeting.
No, I'm not criticizing you. I'm saying some would say you have a big heart and that your analysis of complaints is too generous. That complaints others might regard as frivolous, you, because of your liberal or radical belief in the innate goodness of all human beings, wants to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, when in fact, let's say any good police officer knows that men and women are intrinsically evil, and you have to fundamentally cut out the wheat from the chaff. And what the fuck do we need a CPRB for anyway, particularly headed by a person of a questionable color like yourself?
Well, I've been accused of having a big head. But
dreads on your head.
Big dreads. But let me say this. You said you want to cut through the bullshit.
Yeah.
Let me get really clear about what I feel happened with the destruction of the CPRB. The CPRB, when I got on the board, I was told by politicians that, hey, this is a wonderful thing. This is great. They're doing great work. Get on that. That's a good thing to do. So
politicians. You're talking about the notorious Christopher Crone, for example?
He was one of the politicians who invited people to get involved with city commissions back then. And so I did get involved. You
don't trouble him with any strengthening amendments or anything like that.
Well, I don't know that we talked to him about any of that at the time. And I know that this sounds like a lame excuse, but, and it is a lame excuse, that there is this kind of learning curve. I mean, I came in, I didn't know what this board was about, I didn't know its relationship to the city, but the point I want to get to about the bullshit is that since I got on the board, I started studying more and more about the idea of police oversight by citizens and having a transparent oversight apparatus, which an auditor doesn't provide that. And that's why I think it should be a citizens group.
Now, an auditor, for those who don't know, is instead of having seven people sitting around looking at either reviewing complaints or even actually taking testimony and looking at the real conflicting stories, it's just one person who just looks over what the police department's own internal affairs department has found and sees if there looks to be anything funny in the reports. I suppose any jokes. I don't think any funny.
Okay, like an auditor.
Well written, is a penmanship good?
I don't think an auditor model is the correct model for Santa Cruz, and the reason why is because in a community like this, the public demands transparency. They want to know why a decision was made. They want to know why an officer was exonerated or an officer was the complaint was sustained.
They want to know. The auditor operates in private. Because she in San Jose operates behind closed doors and because she looks at files that are so-called the sacred personnel files of the police department, she can't discuss these matters openly. She can just give the findings, right?
That's right. But here, I think that the public won't be satisfied with that. And
but even if they were satisfied with that, would there be the money to do this kind of a model? It costs, I understand, over $1 million in San Jose?
They have a budget, I believe, of $600,000, if not more. I do know that she makes, $120,000 a year, and she has a staff of 5 or 6 full-time employees.
But a critic would say, that's San Jose. That's a metropolis of 1 million people. We're only 50,000. So if she makes $120,000 a year, couldn't we scale her salary back to $5,000 a year, perhaps?
Oh, yeah. She can move to a more expensive place and with a scaled-down salary and do the same amount of work.
Well, wait a minute. No. I believe the city council voted on Tuesday evening to call in that renowned Eminence Grise, Bob Aronson from Palo Alto, your special counsel for the CPRB, to pick up the slack and do the, quote, auditing job. What kind of a job is Bob Aronson expected to do? We aren't really talking about an auditor model. This is sort of let's take care of the complaints and move along until people forget about the CPRB. We can leave it all to the IA. Or am I just being sarcastic?
Okay. Let me tell you what I feel about that. At the city council meeting on January 28th, Mike Rotkin assured us that this had only to do with the budget, that the reason they were cutting back or cutting the CPRB was because of the budget, that they simply couldn't afford it, there was no money for it. In reality, after he made that statement, they began discussing hiring a person to do the work that there was a group of people volunteering to do all along. We had all read all the cases that are pending, and that's what they're hiring him for, as a temporary person to handle the cases that are pending. We've all read them. We've all discussed them a bit, like, you know, not outside of, not in a meeting, but, like, I think pairs of people have discussed it and what's going on. And what happened, though, is that we offered, since we're all volunteers anyway, to review the cases. And we don't need a staff to do that. We can meet anywhere. We can meet at a restaurant or in my house or whatever.
So that was the issue. At the last council meeting on January 21st, the meeting before the CPRB was disbanded, the budget was cut by two-thirds for the CPRB, so that there's only 20,000 left, something like that?
That's not correct, because they keep bandying about this figure of $90,000 as our budget. And our budget was not $90,000. Our budget for the year, fiscal year 2001-02 was $88,000. The council cut it back in June of last year, so the 2002-03 budget was about $83,000. And so I'm not sure where the $90,000 figure comes from, but since we've gone through half of the year already, and if they're cutting $60,000 out of it, there would only be $23,000 left. If the two employees are what they're talking about, well, $41,000 has already been spent. And I don't know. The math seems really fuzzy. I keep hearing different figures. There's 90,000. There's 110,000. 120,000. Cool. They're saying that part of that money comes from police overtime, and I'm wondering why. Because number one, when I became chair of the board, we removed the police liaison, Sergeant McMahon, from our closed sessions because we felt that it was improper or gave the appearance of impropriety to have her have one side of the issue in closed session and not the other. She came to our meetings, and she sat most of the time, I feel, in my opinion, displaying contempt for many of the members of the public, looking down, playing with a Palm Pilot. I don't know if she was taking notes or if she had to take notes since they were tape recorded, but during the whole time. And so that's a cushy job. I like a job like that where I could sit there and play with my Palm Pilot and get $20,000. But anyway, that's what she did. I didn't think she was necessary.
Not really. That wasn't part of the CPRB budget anyway. That was only the police department budget. Though it was a claim that would be a savings if your board was eliminated. But if you look at the actual amount of money that was cut at half year, I think we got to it because I think that point was. Maybe you want to make a further point on that?
Well, my point is that are they really going to save that $20,000? Is that overtime? Is the police department going to turn that $20,000 over to the city? Now that they get to save it, they don't have to spend it on the CPRB anymore? That's a question I'd like for the city fathers and mothers to answer.
Well, I think the answer, speaking as a prospective city father or mother or possibly grandfather, uncle, raggedy old cousin, is that the money, since most of the money we want to make sure gets put into the police department, since the police department budget was not cut during the last cycle, in spite of claims, rather confusing claims by Assistant City Manager Martine that he was cutting this, but he was adding that. We finally, after working it over, found that he was actually increasing the police budget slightly, even under the threat of Proposition P, which was turned back. But the police department, the idea that they're saving money, you can say, well, how are they saving money if the $20,000 that they're saving doesn't go back, let's say, to the general coffers? The answer is that since the police department really has the first claim on all the money, they're saving it for themselves, the police department, and therefore we should understand it in that sense. They won't have to frivolously spend their money on going to CPRB meetings, but they can spend it instead stopping gang bangs, drug beatings, and weapons of mass destruction.
Well, yeah, that logic is most crooked. It's crooker than a pretzel, which is most crooked. But
I don't know what to say. See, this is the reason that we've luckily gotten rid of these kinds of questionable critics from our commission.
I'm saying the logic that these people are using. The thing is that we were volunteers. They're saying we're taking away the staff, period. They're going away. All right? So when Bob Aronson comes and acts as this auditor, now he's a top-flight attorney who probably makes $300-plus an hour and probably bills for his travel time, coming from Palo Alto, from out of town, they're paying him to save money.
That's what happened at the last meeting 2 days ago. The City Council voted to eliminate the CPRB as of yesterday, mm-hmm. and turn everything over to the attorney for the CPRB, who would come to town and sort of look over the last of the cases and make decisions that would have normally gone into the hands of seven citizens. Two of whom I might mention are African-American citizens, which has no bearing whatsoever on the case, right?
Yeah, I'd like to get to that in a moment. But about
Fitzmaurice himself says, at least, I mean, you have to take this with a grain of salt because it's quoted from Dan White at the Sentinel in his story today. He says that Councilman Fitzmaurice says an auditor has proven effective in other cities. I'd like to ask Mr. Fitzmaurice, how does he know? Has he studied police oversight? I doubt if he studied it to the extent that Vice Chair Faust and myself, former Vice Chair Faust and myself, have. He said, however, he wanted to make sure the auditor retained the functions of the existing CPRB. Now, here's what's interesting about that. They spent a lot of time talking about how flawed the CPRB was and all of its functions. And now they're saying they want to hire someone to do something that volunteers were doing and have them do the same exact thing. They want them to do the same functions, and this is going to save them money. Now, to go back to another point, we felt, myself and Vice Chair Faust, we're both African Americans, we felt extremely dishonored, disrespected by the board, by the city council. We had a report, we formed an ad hoc committee, we studied how to formulate an effective board. We came up with about 11 points, and we were going to put them in a report to the city council. We did report to the CPRB our findings of what would make an effective oversight model, and I can tell you those later, but these things we were ready to present to the council. We attempted to reach them by telephone. We made appointments that some of them didn't show up to. We never got calls back. Our calls weren't answered. And
now, wait a minute. Emily Riley met with you, was it today or yesterday, for 15 minutes. What more do you want? Just because it happened to be after the vote and the discussion, why are you so picky?
Let me finish, man. What I'm saying is that we have spent 6 months working 20 to 40 hours a week and more with the charge that the council gave us in June to come back with a more effective police oversight model. And we've embarked vigorously on that task. We have studied, we've read books, we've interviewed people, gone to conferences, and we've come back with some ideas. We reported them to the board. We're going to report them to the city council. We called them to make appointments to talk to them about it. They wouldn't return our calls. They never brought us in on their process. And when we come to, and then we find out about it at the last moment. After I found out when a Channel 8 news reporter came up to me and asked me about the firing of our staff. And so I feel quite disrespected by that, by them not calling us back.
An inside source in the Citizens Police Review Board has revealed to me that while you claim to have been interested in fulfilling this charge, in fact, you have not done the necessary outreach or made the necessary regular reports to City Council that would assure them you are proceeding in a, with all deliberate speed, to examine the Arnie Leff triage, auditor, let's get these citizens out of the business of looking over our blue brothers' shoulders. Now, Ken, and are you disputing the testimony of your own San Jose deputy trained staff?
I would have to say that, although I think I know who you're talking about.
No way.
If he said that, well, I think he's a great guy, but I think that's bullshit. The fact of the matter is that we have done this.
All your staff are women. What are you talking about?
No, we have two women. Oh, no, we have one. Our staff.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. We're talking about staffers. Well, whoever said that, I don't care who they are, it's bullshit, okay? And it's the responsibility. And one of the points that we're going to bring back to the city council is that we need a staff that is dedicated to the idea of citizen oversight of police. Now, if in a meeting we decided to do a thing, our staff is there to prepare that stuff for us because we're all volunteers. We're doing this. That person's a paid staff. They prepare the stuff. They keep us on track. That's what they're supposed to do.
But isn't that exactly what the staff has been doing? Whether it was Gary Yamane, again, a deputy veteran, I believe, from Santa Clara County, or possibly Jenny, who is also a deputy from San Jose. I mean, isn't it good that we have some knowledgeable police officers in our former police officer employees, the police department, in these key positions?
No. I don't believe that being a police officer makes you an expert on police oversight.
And we interrupt this. Whoops, looks like we lost our producer here, who is going to give a brief announcement. Hopefully she'll call back in about what's coming up on Voices, the community television call-in show, which will be starting in a few moments on Channel 27. I believe there's going to be a... here, that could be our caller now. Hi there.
Hi. I have very little information. They are taping a show tonight, and I believe the host is a woman named Sarah. Sorry, I don't have a last name. And it may or may not be about parenting and child raising. It might also be about the budget. So those are the shoddy rumors that I have scraped up. And yeah.
Well, what about your own club cruise there, Becky? I know you you do a show every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock. We're just coming to the end of your Andrea Tischler medical marijuana show, but you have one coming up next week, right?
I have a few shows on tape next week, and I tape my show airs twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. on Channel 27. And on February 4th, and then a repeat on the 6th, we'll be replaying an interview that Mark Half Moon did with Brian Wilson about U.S. intervention in Colombia. Yeah. Quite a good show. I'm sure many of the issues are extremely relevant in these times with this impending war against Iraq. On the following week, which is February 11th and 13th, we have a new show which I hosted, where it's what's it like to be homeless on the streets of Santa Cruz? And I have a woman who's vehicularly housed and a man who people have probably actually seen him sleeping on the park bench in front of the library in the past, although he's been run out from that spot. So he's, you know, a homeless man who lives out of doors named W.C. So that's on February 11th and 13th. And I believe, although it's not entirely certain, but on the 18th and the 20th, we'll have Roxanne at Kistapache on abuses in the child protective services.
Excellent.
So quite a bit of programming coming up on community TV. And if there's anybody who likes to volunteer on these shows, give me a call. I'm at 429-8529. And we could always use some heavy lifters on my show. So
they'll give you a lift, and then you can give everyone else a lift.
That's the report.
Dig it. Well, thank you very much, Becky.
Okay.
All righty. And that's Club Cruise. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobus Piers, Broadsides, the final half hour. We've been listening to an earlier interview with former Citizens Police Review Board, or I should say Citizens Police Review Board in Exile, as he likes to put it on his most recent writing on the subject, Mark Half Moon, who has been giving us a very interesting, a whole kind of panoply of facts and information and clarification. For a little balance here, although it may cause a little nausea out there in the audience, I'm going to try again to play a little bit from the city council discussion by the city council killing the police review board. I'm having trouble with that. I'm going to try one more time. And let's see what we got here. Doesn't look good. I'm afraid we're kind of out of luck here for some reason. Not sure why. Huh. Well, I know the tape works, so apparently we'll try and salvage some of this on Sunday when I come back. I do a return show Sunday, 10 to 1:30 in the afternoon. We're going to continue with some more from the interview with Mark Half Moon today. And I guess we're also going to take your phone calls. If you have any commentary on anything you've heard, you'd like to give some thoughts, make some criticisms, make some additions, sing a song, do a dance, briefly, here's your opportunity. As Emily Riley says, here's your 2 minutes for oral communication. 427-3772. You can give us a call here and tell us if you have any thoughts on what you've heard. And you can actually call during the tape that you're hearing. You're about to hear. It sounds like somebody is calling. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Hello? Are you there?
I don't hear you. Try again. So, yeah, apologize, caller. We didn't catch you. I don't know whether you didn't hear us or possibly the connection was bad. It sounded like you weren't saying anything. So try again if you'd like, 427-3772. And perhaps you want to talk to me off air, and what I'm going to do now is put on the tape, and we have another 25 minutes until Uncle Dennis comes in with From the Cream to the Dregs. And it's worth listening to, so give it a listen.
I think being a former police officer can be helpful. Like one of our board members is a former county sheriff from some California county.
David Round.
Yes, and he is very insightful because he has a perspective that that we don't have, and it includes both the things that police departments would like for us to know about them, the good things, and things that they wouldn't want us to know, bad things that they do. He was on the inside, and he knows. When we brought this stuff back and the council refused to listen to our reports and shut us out of the process, we felt that they were looking at us and going, these are a couple of black guys here. They're either incompetent or they have an agenda and don't know what they're doing. We better, even though they're volunteers, we better go out and hire a white guy with credentials who we could trust, because he's more likely to think like we do.
Just a moment here. Aren't you, as we say, playing the race card, calling nigger, nigger, nigger?
Damn right, I am. I am playing the race card because it's the only goddamn card I got. I've told you this before.
So in other words, you have no substantial arguments but your skin color and the claim of the bogus claim of prejudice by our progressive city council.
Well, let me say this. All racism is not necessarily conscious. Sometimes it's subconscious. We in this society have been bombarded continuously our entire lives with these messages that say that these people, like I Spy, Bill Cosby was always the sidekick. You know, the person of color is always, you know, Lone Ranger and Tonto, Cisco Kid and Pancho. You know, the person of color is always...
Each to his own place.
They're always the sidekick, but they're never the leader. And I believe I've lived in this society my whole life, getting close to 50 years. And for most of the time in this society, I've worked in the media, which is a white-dominated field. And I've continuously felt that people somehow couldn't get their minds around the fact that I might know what I'm talking about. And they have a difficult time, often, some people, without even being aware of it, finding themselves being a subordinate to myself or to a person of color. I can't possibly know more, because that implied that I knew more than them. And I feel that this is the case in the city council. I believe that there's possibly subconscious. I don't think these are bad people. I think they're good people. I've known some of them for many, many years. But I do believe that the racism is something that's institutionalized, and it works on people's subconscious levels. Why else would they be afraid to embrace us and say, well, we support you, and we want to hear what you have to say?
Because there's a budget crisis. Haven't you heard?
Well, if there's a budget crisis, the police department has a budget of $114,000 for vehicle abatement. The city council stated that they wanted to only keep essential safety services. Are we having a big problem with a lot of people tripping and falling over abandoned vehicles? Is that really a safety issue?
Well, I suppose the next thing going to propose is cutting the $1 million PR budget.
Exactly.
Well, now, why would you want to do that? We need better officers. We need better public relations. Don't you understand?
Well,
these are tight times.
Well, let me explain this. $980,000, I think it is, close to $1 million in a budget for what they call community relations, which is really, like you said, public relations. And I find that what it is, that includes their budget for the Citizen Police Academy, which they encourage everyone to be a part of, where they show you the police side of things. They show you how they operate, of course. They give you a lot of information. There's a lot of good stuff there. But I also found that everything was definitely police biased. According to every class I went there, the police never do anything wrong. And that's what we find in these reports that we get, too, that no matter what is complained of, in every single one that comes back to us, virtually everyone, the police never do anything wrong. These are a bunch of angels. They shouldn't have shields. They shouldn't have badges and guns. They should have wings and harps, because they're unearthly how good they are. They never do anything wrong, unless it's some minor procedural thing where the police department will say they'll sustain a complaint against an officer.
Has been major improvement since the bad old days.
With the police department? Well, when I first came to Santa Cruz, I would say that there is an improvement, because I was regularly harassed by the police back in the 1970s, pulled over constantly in my car, even though it was legal, and constantly, even standing on the street, approached by the police and asked my name, and of course...
They're going to play the race card again, happen?
Absolutely. The reason why I say that is because you have to look at it from my point of view. I've lived in this society. I was born in the 1950s. I've seen racism. I've lived in Philadelphia. I've lived in the South. I've lived in the South, L.A. And I've lived in various other racist areas, and I've lived here. And we have a more subtle form of racism. And again, individuals who have bigoted opinions, I don't consider to be racist. I think they're prejudiced, they're bigots. But when an institution can act on you, a police department or a city council or a city government or a U.S. government, can act on you, that's racism. That's an institution acting on you. And the fact that the police were always stopping me, and one time I was with four other people who were all white, and they stopped me out of the whole group and asked me my name and wrote it down.
Well, you always want to stand out in these matters. Can't you blend in?
You don't know how much I would like to blend in. When I was living in the Bay Area in Berkeley, when I walked down the street and the police drove by, they barely glanced my way. If a police officer was walking toward me on the street, they often said hello. Now I walk up and down the street, and when I first came back to Santa Cruz, they did the old thing that they used to do. They'd drive by and turn their heads and give you the cold, deadly stare, like daring you to stare back. Well, I don't stare back. I'll look back because I'm into giving out good vibes. And I look, but they give you the cold stare, like trying to stare you down. Now that they know who I am, what happens is they sort of ignore me. They walk down the street, and I'm a pretty friendly fellow. I speak to people, hello, and I wave at them or not. And these guys, when I do it to them, I still do it to them, even though they ignore me. They ignore me. And
well, nobody asked you to move here, Half Moon. If you don't like it, why don't you go back where you came from?
Actually, my kids asked me to move here because they live here, and my teenage kids. And they didn't ask me directly.
Well, we can answer for everything, don't you?
Let me see.
Well, perhaps not everything. Let's get back to the issue of the future of the... of police review. You've kind of indicated that you don't have a lot of confidence. We've talked a lot, perhaps far too much, about the old police review board, the former police review board, its foils, its foibles, its fantasies. The fact of the matter is, however, what are people in Santa Cruz who are interested in police review to do starting today?
Well, I believe that there needs to be a going back to the drawing board with what we've learned from this last experiment. And it's going to take another grassroots movement. And I know it sounds big, but that grassroots movement, I believe, should be aimed toward not getting an ordinance passed by city council, but by getting a ballot measure put on the city ballot demanding this. A city, I think it was Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that people I met at the conference that I went to told us that that's how they did it. It's mandated by law by the people. So it doesn't allow politicians to tinker with it as much and reinterpret it.
You're not criticizing Councilmember Kennedy and his three-year delay of police review, are you, by any chance?
Well, I'm afraid that I've known Scott Kennedy for a long time, but I'm afraid I might have to criticize him on this because you have to take this with a grain of salt because it's written by Dan White and it's in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, so it may or may not be true, but he says that Kennedy, who was on the council when the panel was created, said the board was an experiment that did improve the quality of local policing, but was taken over by a few negative activists. I'd like to know who he's talking about. Who was the board taken over with? Taken over by? What negative activists? Was it myself and Vice Chair Faust, or was it some other person? What do you think?
I, as an extremely positive-minded individual who has never criticized the board without cause, would have nothing to say on this time until I speak to my attorney, Bob Aarons.
Okay, you can't lie on the radio, Robert. You know that.
Well, yes, I agree. The fact of the matter is, I think that that refers to activists not on the board. I think that Kennedy is claiming that individuals like myself, Becky Johnson and others, are responsible for somehow subverting the board, either in the public mind or taking up too much of its time, or as Ken McLaughlin libelously claimed in a column in the San Jose Mercury, making the overwhelming majority of frivolous complaints and contributing to the demise of the board, supposedly an inference from something Mike Rodkin said.
I'd like to make this clear. I believe that since I've been on the board for the last year, that we've only reviewed one complaint.
Listening to Mark Half Moon and an earlier interview. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
We're with Mark Half Moon. It's 2:15 on January 30th, 2002, in community television. You were saying that, actually, I believe in this year, I think I have, there have been one, two, or three complaints I've filed. I don't know how many have actually been reviewed. You were talking about that.
We only reviewed one case that you had filed in the last year. I don't believe it was a frivolous case.
The Norman Friedberg breadcrumb, beat up the breadcrumb guy complaint, as I call it.
That's right. And that had mixed findings, which I believe are published now, due to the fact that Mr. Friedberg seemed to have, like, kicked some cop's ass.
Sergeant Butchie Baker?
The fellows involved in it seemed to have got their ass kicked, and Mr. Friedberg admitted it himself in his own statement. Said that he kicked their ass.
Well, my witnesses have differing accounts. My concern was not so much with who. He obviously didn't win. He was beaten up and hauled off to jail and then spent a month and a half there on five felony charges. I think some of them were, you know, plea bargained away. The real question, of course, is whether the police department and the CPRB, which, of course, is no longer in existence, either decides to or is somehow coerced into endorsing a kind of police department policy that will allow CSO Gray to create an incident involving giving breadcrumbs to pigeons and declining to take a ticket after that breadcrumb, the breadcrumb menace has been dealt with, as it happened with Food Not Bombs on June 24th or 25th on that day at the Cooper and Pacific when this incident happened.
I don't think that's good policing. I don't think that you just take a negative attitude. And talk about negativity. You don't just take a negative attitude toward people. You take a positive, community-oriented attitude. They talk about community policing quite a bit. I just got a couple of books that I'm still getting material from people I've written to, from a group called Policy Link in Sacramento, from a woman I met at a conference put on by the Speaker of the House of the California State Legislature, Assembly, on police practices, and we talked about these kinds of issues, about police abuse, and I just got a booklet about community policing, and Chief Belcher talks about community policing a lot, but I think there's a lot of policing in there and not that much community, because according to the experts, these are people whose jobs are doing this, they've been doing it for many years, and the ACLU, you go to the community, you speak with them, your point is to say, hey, we're one of you, we're not against you, and that doesn't just mean going to the business leaders or to the wealthy folks or to the people who are going to go by your rules and say we're one of you, but everybody, including the poor people in the community, including Mexicans and blacks and gay people, everybody in the community. It means just what it says, community policing.
Look at this case, the Norman Friedberg case, which I was not a percipient witness to, but I did interview six people who were, and read numerous accounts of others who witnessed this incident at the Food Not Bombs meal in the afternoon of a late June day. The issue primarily, as I understand it, was the failure to recognize the authority of a police officer, the lack of respect for the badge, the gun, the ticket book. And that seemed, that is my analysis. Perhaps, you're the one who read the IA files, and you're now under arrest for revealing anything in secret, of course. But you can, was that the core of the case, respect or lack of respect? I mean, the idea that we will punish you if you don't have the right attitude seems to me to be behind numerous stops on Pacific Avenue, certainly of poor people, of performers, and possibly of young people and others.
Well, I think that's correct. I do not believe that. Looking at this situation, Dave Rowan has a phrase for this back when he was a police officer. They called it glorifying a misdemeanor. In this case, glorifying an infraction. This man was accused of littering by throwing breadcrumbs on the sidewalk, which may have been picked up by birds anyway. But even though he walked away and initially refused to pick them up, he was convinced by Food Not Bombs people to pick them up, which he did pick them up. Why not let him pick them up and say, please, sir, don't do that again. It causes a mess on the sidewalk. And chances are the guy wasn't going to do it again. I mean, he just...
And we're interrupting this interview with Mark Kaplan because we have a caller from a man we haven't heard from in quite some time. Hi there, caller.
Robert North, how are you?
It's good to hear you again there, caller. I know that you have some opinions that are sometimes not held by the majority of our listeners, but you've been listening to some of this babble about the killing of the Police Review Board, right?
Well, let me comment. What's, I think, known to most is that it was never intended to have any authority.
I agree.
Okay. And it was a matter of time before it was disbanded. The community is probably better off with the thing disbanded rather than having this ruse.
Well, I would certainly agree that we need real citizen control of the police. And what would you think about that?
I agree with you. What tends to happen is that when you're talking, I think most of us, myself included, respect very deeply police work. However, there's a lot of power that goes with that police work, and therefore, in an honest, open society, that power needs to be checked. And the way that you check it is by having a community that is willing to observe local abuse of power. And I would, on this occasion, call on the carpet many of the so-called political activists in Santa Cruz that choose to activate themselves when it's 500 or 3,000 miles away. When the abuse is right here in the community, well, their plate is full, or they don't know enough about it, or whatever the appropriate one-liner is. So that's my position on it. I think that police have a very, very difficult job. However, they have an incredible amount of power, and they can, like all human beings, make mistakes. And the reason why in some enlightened communities police review boards have risen on the unseen is because there are situations that are horrendous. The recent actions in Illinois, which some might say are overzealous on the part of the outgoing governor, but clearly people have been electrocuted, have gone to the gas chamber that were innocent. And the perpetrators in law enforcement and in prosecution are immune, and they suffer no consequences. So this is the reality of the situation. We're human beings. We make mistakes.
And I think that, you know, if you have some kind of the advocates of Citizen Police Review Board, I remember a decade ago, were saying Ben Rice, Margaret Marr, all these liberal attorneys and other community supporters who really put the case quite well, you actually assist the police department in the city by having a strong and effective citizen police review board, because that way you stop lawsuits, you note bad officers and bad patterns before they get to the position where you have to fire half the department or, you know, kick the chief out like they did in 1982 with Chief Peeney and the Code Blue scandal when they were beating up homeless people. I mean, I think that there are many good arguments, and the problem is it's always a political struggle, because the police department frequently, many police departments anyway, certainly the Santa Cruz Police Department, didn't want any police review board, and Chief Belcher still doesn't want any police review board. Even the relatively ineffectual one we have had until January 29th, when the city council killed it. But I think that what you might, I'd like to hear you comment on, is the duplicitous way this was done. I know that you're going to say it's no surprise to you, but I think it's always important to clarify what's really going on, because the media attempts to confuse us or just confuses us because it prints the comments of the people in power. The claim that this is some sort of budget-cutting measure, the claim that the complaints given to the Police Review Board are frivolous complaints, the claim that the board is, nobody likes the board anyway, so why not get rid of it and have its functions handed over to one individual who can do it more simply and more effectively. All these are false claims that I think, I don't know if you've been listening for the last hour and a half to former chair Mark Halfmoon. I think he's quite right on these things. And what he's really looking for, and as a chair of the board has been looking for the last year, much too slowly in my opinion, but he still has been looking for it, is a new process whereby we'd have a real effective oversight body.
Well, I think that I look at it in context like the homeless task force, which in political practice was set up to diffuse energy. It was never intended to have any consequence, any authority consequence. It was intended to take away energy from people that might have used their energy in a more effective result. And I think the same thing with the Police Review Board as it became. It became a sounding board that was going to go nowhere, and I think sure there were likely to be some frivolous complaints. There, everything in a sense gets degenerated into frivolity, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater and/or that the concept is wrong. The concept that law enforcement needs to be held accountable is not wrong.
You're right.
If that's wrong, well then the only thing that's right is to go along with whatever the agenda is that percolates down from the top, and that's not right.
Well, wait a minute.
If that were right, we would not have the vote. Now, what I want to say,
yes.
Robert, and forgive me, is that I find it entertaining at its best and very disturbing at its worst that quite a few of the local politicians, some of which I have a great deal of respect for, do not tend to stand up for issues like this when they involve our own community. And where the rubber meets the road is in your own community, where these issues are the most difficult are in your own community. They're not in Palestine or Iran, although those things are important. They're right here in Santa Cruz.
Well, or they stand up too late. For example, on Tuesday night, Christopher Crone actually came down in his business suit and not only spoke up in favor of the continued police review, although what he did was he read this kind of weak-ass letter signed by Celia Scott and Sandy Brown and some of the old SCAN regulars, which asked that the CPRB members be included in a continuing process, instead of saying, why the fuck don't you give us a stronger board so we can actually do what we tried to do 10 years ago, but Scott Kennedy stopped us and Mike Rotkin stopped us from doing.
Well, you have a city council that is, including Mr. Rotkin, that I have deep respect for, by the way, that is used to doing politics by polls. Not too long ago, Mr. Rotkin, at the drop of a hat, would spend $50,000 on a poll rather than stick his neck out. In many cases, this was the Santa Cruz political style, as was the style of these meaningless task forces that were propped up to make it look like they're doing something, when in practice what they're doing is they're allowing an issue to spin itself out, giving some of the insider politicals in town, like Don Lane, some income.
Well, you know, Bob, I know you've done a lot of work in trying to get rent control back on the public agenda, and Mike Rotkin always sidelines you by saying things like, oh, we tried that in 1982 and we lost. Is there anything going on with rent control that you want to talk about briefly before we're almost at the end of our show?
I think it's probably past its opportunity because the intensity is not where it was at the turn of the decade. In terms of the relationship of the renters to the landlords, so that's where I think it's at. The opportunity has been lost that was there in the late 90s, where Santa Cruz could have truly taken a leadership position with this issue if it wanted to, but it chose to stay in the sidelines. And in fact, in many ways, Santa Cruz will wait until other leadership communities like Berkeley take the lead, and San Francisco, and on.
Well, also, let's not forget that we're in the middle of the Bush War, and I keep hoping that we'll begin to see the kind of mass outpouring of protests that I think is still a possibility for stopping this war if it comes from enough quarters.
We might disagree on certain things, you and I, both geopolitically and otherwise. I think that it's very difficult to have to do the cost-cutting, for example, that the Santa Cruz City School Board is doing. You can't please all parties when you do that. I don't necessarily think it was a wrong move to cut the Police Review Board, but let's not cut the throat of the concept, which is that police need to be accountable. They're human beings, and they make errors either by accident and in some cases on purpose. And this is reality, and it's not that difficult to research this issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Bob, for calling in. Good to hear from you again. Glad you're back at your old stand, and call again.
Robert, take care.
All righty.
Thank you.
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You've been listening to Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. We're reaching the final few minutes of that show, and we're going to be coming into Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. For all of you who had enough of the chatter and want to hear a little old-time music that might, both calm you down and rev you up, get you ready to get out there on the streets and fight this war before it descends on us like a huge black plague. We're going to be continuing with this Mark Half Moon interview on Sunday, starting at 10 o'clock, when I'll be coming back to Free Radio, and when I do a 3.5-hour show this weekend. And I'm hope that you will be joining us. If you want to post your comments, the topic of discussion of this city council decapitation of the police review board, and for me it is that. I mean, while it's true that the board was ineffectual in many ways, it moved to kill the board at the time when it was moving on issues of racial profiling, selective enforcement, display of force policy, and even this shooting of Raymond Quinton. All these issues were coming up, and I think the police chief wanted those interests out of the public view and not discussed in the way that the board at least provided some kind of forum for this to happen. So we're going to be picking this issue up again on Sunday and doing that. And if you want to join that, you can go on the website, the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, where some articles are posted on the subject. Join the discussion. Give your thoughts. www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. And you can also give a call to Mark Halfmoon. He has a voicemail. He's interested in anybody who wants to be supportive of the Citizen Police Review Board in exile, as he calls it, because he has a lot of information. They did a lot of work that is essentially being dumped by the city council, but which should not be dumped by the community. And the number to call for Mark is 457-9754, extension 1788. Again, 457-9754, extension 1788. And in case you can't remember all these long numbers, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF is the number to call. Peace Friday is tomorrow, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock down there at Water and Pacific. Come on down, hoist a sign, come on out and stop this war before it stops hundreds of thousands of people and who knows, maybe millions of people. And stay tuned for Uncle Dennis. We're going to go out on a little something from Phil Free, and actually I think it may even be Skidmark Bob, Just Kiddin's Kill the Cop Inside. We don't intend any violence here. We're actually trying to stop violence.